What's a driver for great power diplomacy at a crucial juncture for the Middle East? Saudi Crown Prince welcomed to the White House. It is a moment that we're in the region that's in the throes of a once-in-a-generation pendulum swing of political fault lines. With all the trimmings of a state visit between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, a broad mix of historic bilateral security ties, regional reach-outs to the likes of Syria and Israel, as we heard in the press conference that took place just a short while ago, trade ties, and also personal enrichment. We'll ask about the Trump family's longstanding links to the kingdom and chatter that blends big real estate ventures with procurement of F-35 fighter jets. That blurring of lines between affairs of state and private investment, just one of the talking points as the Saudi Crown Prince is welcomed for the first time since the 2018 murder of a dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi. How much has Saudi Arabia changed? How much has Mohammed bin Salman changed? The nation that bagged the 2034 World Cup also a key for Trump's plans for the Middle East that have newly endorsed by the UN Security Council for a U.S. president who campaigned against forever wars. Will this visit by MBS help to secure stability or keep the U.S. bogged down in the region for decades more? Today in the France 24 debate, we're asking about the prince and the president. And with us from Washington, Salman Al-Ansari, founder and president of the Saudi American Public Relations Affairs Committee. Lots of invites for that big state dinner later. Will you be in the room?
Hello, Francois. I wish. Let's hope.
All right. Let's hope. It's early days. There's still a few hours to go. Thanks for joining us.
Exactly.
Thanks to Mohammed Suleiman, senior fellow at the Middle East Institute think tank, as well for joining us here in the France 24 debate. All right, we'll try to fix the sound issue there. Where this as well is former French ambassador to Saudi Arabia and Qatar, Bertrand Besancenot. You're also a senior advisor to the consultancy NSI. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And from Berlin, Suzanne Koebel, foreign correspondent for news magazine Der Spiegel, a former correspondent in Saudi Arabia. You penned the book Behind the Kingdom's Veil, Inside the New Saudi Arabia, under Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we just saw this press conference take place. It's, by the way, both lunch and dinner at the White House this Tuesday. The lunch taking place as we speak. There was the welcome on the South Lawn of the White House. And then we had the questions that were fielded by the press, some flattering, other less so, in a sort of a freewheeling question-answer session as we've grown used to them inside of the Oval Office. For more, let's cross now to our correspondent, Fraser Jackson, who is at the White House. Fraser, there was some announcements, $600 billion in investment that's pledged. The pledge has grown. Some talk about those F-35 signing defense agreements and some more pointed questions. All right, we seem to have a sound issue there with we're having a sound issue there with Fraser. We'll try to fix that with the White House, of the joys of live television there. Ambassador Besancenot, you got a chance to listen to part of that press conference, and it was true to form. We heard U.S. president who was on form, and Mohammed bin Salman, who took it all in stride.
No, I think that the relationship between the two leaders is an excellent one. This is clear. But of course, they have a different style. We know how President Trump behave and love to express his satisfaction about his own governance. And we know that, of course, the Prince Mohammed bin Salman is a much more discreet person, and like it is in the region, where there is always this spirit of decency, where you have to be more cautious in what you express. But you can see that apparently the feeling is good between the two leaders.
Hello.
For reasons which are substantific reasons. This visit is important because for both the relationship between Saudi Arabia and the United States, but also for the region. Clearly, there is a common will to start a new chapter in the relationship between the two countries, in extending it to other fields. Usually, it was oil and security. Now, of course, security is always there, but you have also other new fields of cooperation, like the artificial intelligence in tourism, in culture, in training, in other things. So there is this will. And the second common will is clearly to try to stabilize the region, even if there are differences between the policies of the two countries, in particular on the Palestinian issue. But they want to discuss. Both of them are supposed to be master of deals. So they will discuss certainly in substance what could be done in order to try to find a solution to the Palestinian issue, even if it will be very difficult to implement the Trump-Gaza agreement.
Yeah, and we heard Mohammed bin Salman pressing on that when asked about it. There was the question of what happens next in a region that's seeing its biggest shift in political fault lines in decades. There was a bit the past that was prosecuted in that question and answer session. At one point, one of the journalists asking the Saudi Crown Prince about the 2018 murder of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
About the journalists, it's really painful to hear, you know, anyone that been losing his life for, you know, no real purpose or not in a legal way. And it's been painful for us in Saudi Arabia. We've did all the right steps of investigation, etc., in Saudi Arabia, and we've improved our system to be sure that nothing happened like that. And it's painful, and it's a huge mistake, and we are doing our best that this doesn't happen again.
So we can cross now back to the White House and Fraser Jackson, our correspondent. So there was that zinger directed at Mohammed bin Salman. There was another zinger directed at Donald Trump, and that was over potential conflicts of interest, what with reports that have surfaced in the last days about new deals involving Trump's sons and real estate in the kingdom.
Yeah, I just want to touch first on Jamal Khashoggi, though. The most revealing, really, moment of that was actually not the exchange that took place between Mary Bruce from ABC, my colleague here at the White House, and MBS on Jamal Khashoggi, but actually what Donald Trump said about that before. Her question was about Trump's business dealings, his family's business dealings, and instead Donald Trump chose to respond to the question to MBS at first, and his answer raised a few eyebrows. He said that MBS had done a phenomenal job. He said about Jamal Khashoggi, he said, "You're mentioning somebody that was extremely controversial. A lot of people didn't like that gentleman that you're talking about. Whether you like him or didn't like him, things happen." Donald Trump then actively broke with the assessment of U.S. intelligence agencies that said that the murder and dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi was ordered by the Crown Prince, MBS. Donald Trump broke with that by saying, quote, "He knew nothing about it, and we can leave it at that." That was a remarkable moment inside the Oval Office. But then Mary's second question to the president was about his business dealings and his family's business dealings in Saudi Arabia. Just 24 hours before this meeting took place between MBS and Donald Trump at the fireside of the Oval Office, there was an announcement that the Trump Organization and a Saudi real estate firm that has close ties to the Saudi government will be opening a new luxury resort in the Maldives, which has a cryptocurrency funding structure, which means effectively people will be able to buy into the construction of this to help fund the construction of it through crypto. Now, Donald Trump pushed back against any suggestions that his family that he was involved and therefore it was a relationship that was not that was untoward, I should say. Instead, Donald Trump pushed back about that, saying that he had nothing to do with the family business. He said, "I've left and I've devoted 100% of my energy. What my family does is fine." He said they do business all over. He then also said they've done very little with Saudi Arabia, actually. I'm sure they could do a lot, and everything they've done has been very good. That is simply not true. Donald Trump's family has had quite a lot of business with Saudi Arabia and is behind numerous projects, including in Jeddah, but also beyond Saudi Arabia's borders, like that development that we just spoke about in the Maldives as well.
Fraser Jackson, many thanks for joining us. Yeah, the Maldives, the Saudi real estate development firm Dar Global, teaming up with the Trump organization for a plan for a luxury resort there, one where customers can pay in crypto. And then there's what the New York Times reported over the weekend, plans for a Trump-branded property, part of the $63 billion project to transform the historic town of Dorea into a luxury destination. That's on top of the of a Trump Tower planned for Jeddah and two projects announced in Riyadh. When Trump visited Saudi Arabia in May, he got the grand tour of Dorea and of its historic UNESCO pre-Islamic World Heritage site. Mohammed Soliman, is there a larger than usual conflict of interest here for the U.S., and is it a talking point where you are?
Let me say that last time the Crown Prince was in Washington, that was in 2018. It was a different United States, it was a different Saudi Arabia, and it was a different global order. The Crown Prince today is in Washington. This is, I would say, the peak of U.S.-Saudi relationship historically. We are seeing a clear pivot from energy for security framework. I mean, and you can see this from the list of MOUs that will be announced later today, more focus on AI compute infrastructure. This is something that Crown Prince has talked about in the Brussels conference when he said, we as Saudi Arabia have a need, domestic need for computing power. So you're going to see a lot of announcements about AI partnership between Saudi Arabia and a lot of American AI labs. Second part, which I think is under discussed, is the question of critical minerals and the role that Saudi Arabia could play supporting the United States in building a critical minerals that sector that's resilient and can withstand Chinese pressure, specifically after the Chinese export control ban on critical minerals that are very critical to military equipments and chip design. The third thing is, you're looking also into Saudi Arabia, U.S. trying to co-pilot a regional order in the Middle East. You see much more conversations around what does the future of the Middle East look like, from connectivity to AI buildup to political pathway that includes an expansive version of the Abraham Accords. And when the Crown Prince was asked about the Abraham Accords and normalization with Israel, he said, we would like to join, but we want a clear pathway to a two-state solution. So I think this is a very different trip. Clearly, the two sides believe that this is a peak, that this is already a win on its own.
All right, and yeah, a peak, you got the sense of that when there was the question about this sale of 48 F-35 U.S. fighter jets. Donald Trump was asked by one of the journalists whether, because there is a U.S. law that Israel must have technological supremacy when it comes to the F-35s, Donald Trump was asked if Saudis would get the same whistles and bells if the fighter jets were sold. Let's listen to Donald Trump.
The F-35, and you're asking me, is it the same? I think it's going to be pretty similar, yeah.
You know, how will that
this affect? Is a great ally, and Israel's a great ally. And I know they'd like you to get planes of reduced caliber. I don't think that makes you too happy. They've been a great ally. Israel's been a great ally. And we're looking at that exactly right now. But as far as I'm concerned, I think they are both at a level where they should get top of the line.
Salman al-Ansari, so does that mean you get exactly the same as the Israelis?
Hello, Francois. Thank you for having me. Absolutely. Like, Saudi Arabia actually adds value to the United States. It's a net value kind of country. It's not a country that actually asks for support or financial support from the United States like Israel. That's number one. And the idea of the competitive edge, etc., is not actually something to be looked at anymore, because Israel has used the F-35 to bomb another U.S. ally in the GCC, which is Qatar. So, and the Saudis would never have done such a move. So when it comes to, and one of the things actually that actually was remarkable that President Trump said just minutes ago, that he literally trusts the Saudis. And he frankly reminded me of what the father of history, Herodotus said 2,500 years ago. He said, no people honor their pledges more than the Arabs. So, and Saudi Arabia is the cradle of the Arab civilization. So overall, President Trump, I believe, is an extraordinary leader, the kind you see in America once in a lifetime. And the same goes, the same is true for Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Both are realist, pragmatic, patriotic reformers who are also laser focused on prosperity for their people. And I believe what happens between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia never stays between them alone. It shapes global security and global economic prosperity. And we know for decades, Saudi Arabia and America have stood together. We fought communism together. We fought terrorism together. And we stabilized the global energy markets together. So, and I think right now, as your guest mentioned, that artificial intelligence becomes somehow the new driver of global power, and AI may become actually the next big bridge between Riyadh and Washington. And from a Saudi perspective, we believe, firmly believe, that American security contributes directly to global security, and American prosperity supports global prosperity. A stable United States means a more stable world. And as the American philosopher and founding father, Thomas Paine, said, the cause of America is in a great measure the cause of all mankind. The cause of America is in all great measure the cause of all mankind. And there are four major things, actually, the Saudis want from the United States, and four things that President Trump wants from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, I summarize it as FAND, F-A-N-D, which is F stands for F-35 jets, as you've mentioned. The A is artificial intelligence and semiconductor access. And the N stands for nuclear cooperation, peaceful nuclear plants, etc. And also the D stands for the defense agreement, the long-term defense agreement between Saudi Arabia and the United States. And it's going to be a mutual defense. It's not going to be like from one side to another only. So, and also when it comes to the U.S. demands, based on the reports and based on also what we have heard, I can summarize it as NICE, which is, we always appreciate niceness, N-I-C-E. N stands for normalization with Israel. Definitely, when it comes to Saudi, it should be under the right conditions. I stands for investment ties, which is something that has been taking a big chunk of the meetings. And C stands for China military decoupling in sensitive sectors, and definitely E stands for energy stability, which the Saudis have proved themselves in this field for decades. And definitely not everything will be finalized on today's visit, but the goal is progress, momentum, and a shared recognition.
Salman, we just had 20 days of naval exercises between Saudi Arabia and China, a defense pact with the United States. Does that mean we won't be seeing any more of those kinds of exercises, that the U.S. is going to ask the Saudis to take their foot off the gas when it comes to deepening ties with Beijing?
That's actually a good question. And today, Riyadh is aligning, I would say, aligning its foreign policy with its geography. I don't know if there is a word for that, but we sit at the crossroads of continents, trade routes, energy flows, emerging technologies, etc. So balance is not a slogan for us. It's a necessity. And the United States remains a key partner in this balanced approach, that's for sure. But definitely, as we know, China 30 years ago used to be the biggest trading partner for 20 countries. Right now, it's the biggest trading partner for more than 125 countries, including the United States. Actually, on top of them is the United States. So it's a reality on the ground. But definitely for the Saudis, we always appreciate the security partnership of the United States. We believe in the U.S. technology. But at the same time...
So it's America first.
It's always Saudi first for us. And that's why we actually synchronize with America, because America first, and we hope it's going to remain America first. So, yeah. But okay. Definitely... This visit is historic for three major things. That this visit comes after three shifts in the Middle East. Saudi Arabia normalized relations with Iran, so, and also the Pakistani nuclear umbrella, and definitely the third is the regional or the global recognitions of Saudi Arabia's role in mediation, and we've seen this between Russia and the United States, and so, also its strong relations with China and Russia. So Saudi Arabia is going to play the balanced approach, but it will always appreciate and prioritize the United States for multiple reasons that are for the Saudi interest.
All right, Suzanne Kölbl, let me ask you then. You have... Again, this isn't your usual welcome of a foreign leader to the White House. That's as we've seen so many since January the 20th. It's full honors. It's a it looks like a state dinner, even though it's not officially called that. What's happening later? 1,200 guests. Among them, there's going to be Cristiano Ronaldo, the straight off his red card against Ireland in a World Cup qualifier. He plays his football in Saudi Arabia. In the last 7 years, a lot's happened, including Saudi Arabia getting the rights to the 2034 World Cup. Your thoughts on the Saudi Arabia today as opposed to the Saudi Arabia when MBS first became Crown Prince?
It's a complete different country today, as it was certainly. I had the pleasure, the privilege to live there at a time when you woke up every morning and something unimaginable happened, like a marathon for females or a movie film suddenly in a cinema that has been built at a time when you couldn't go out together, women and men, and now it's a complete normal country. And that was, I mean, that's a fantastic thing, no doubt about it. But when I hear your or my colleagues here speaking to you, I cannot only see a purely rosy picture. Certainly it's wonderful that people have more liberties now. Certainly it's great that people can have a normal life there, and that's absolutely an achievement which has to be welcomed and which is fabulous for the people, and it's a great achievement. At the same time, no word about human rights anymore. And no word about people who cannot raise their voices. I mean, there is no freedom of speech. I mean, the liberties are there, but certainly there is no... it's still an authoritarian country. And I'm also worried about the things like the nuclear cooperation. It's a civil nuclear cooperation we are talking about. At the end of the day, it sounds like it's the beginning of a nuclear armament in the Middle East that could be the start for many other countries to get nuclear armed. And so I see not only positive developments, even I'm very happy for the Saudi people, the way their country has changed and opened up to a normal life.
Ambassador Besancenot, your time in Saudi Arabia was even earlier than that of Suzanne. Do you share her concerns? That, is the Trump administration giving away too much with a nuclear deal? With
No, frankly speaking, I don't think so. The Saudi leadership has been very clear that they are interested in the civilian nuclear program. And at the same time, Prince Mohammed bin Salman said that if the Iranians had a nuclear bomb, of course Saudi Arabia would go the same route. But this is a different story. And for the time being, everybody is still expecting to have an agreement that would avoid having an Iranian nuclear armament. And the Saudis are not going in that direction. So it means that what we are talking about right now is a civilian program of cooperation between the US and Saudi Arabia. But there are other partners. I know that Korea, France, and others are also interested in cooperating with Saudi Arabia in the nuclear field. So this is a different story. And when we talk about what was the agreement with Pakistan, clearly on the Pakistani side, they were not saying that their nuclear capabilities was usable, if I may say, by the Saudis. It was not said at all. So this is why I think we are mixing different things which have not to be mixed in this purpose.
Because we have seen concern, Mohammed Soliman, that the recent defense pact that the Trump administration signed with Qatar, some in Washington saying it means that the Trump that the United States has to intervene in case Qatar is attacked. But what are the counterparts? And were those worried that it'll be the same with the Saudis, that this is going to bog down the United States further in the Middle East at a time when Donald Trump has promised his voters that there wouldn't be forever wars or forever military commitments?
Excellent question, and let me add context to the Qatar deal and what we're expecting from the U.S.-Saudi engagement today. So those are commitments by executive order from the President of the United States. They are not Senate ratified. As you know, we have a very complex congressional dynamics around defense agreements, and it's very unlikely to see a full defense pact from the Senate. Without a broader regional order that includes normalization with Israel. This is the reality as it is. So Washington, or this current White House, is trying to play around, given the political dynamics, and offer Saudi Arabia the commitments that Saudi wants. And the Saudis want that sort of commitment to anchor their relationship. You cannot go ask the Saudis for billions and billions of dollars in investment, being their anchor, the anchor for critical minerals for the United States, and be a hub for compute, American compute overseas and globally, without any sort of commitment to this country. So clearly, they're trying to figure out what's a framework, what's a new framework that will bring Riyadh and Washington, D.C. Together. And this is why you're seeing different items that are anchoring this sort of partnership. And speaking about nuclear cooperation here, just to make sure that I add more context to the viewers, the UAE has a civilian nuclear program that contributes 12% of its own energy mix. This is in partnership with Korea. The Egyptians and the Turks are also building their own civilian nuclear program. So we should not only think about the Middle East when it comes to nuclear, from nuclear technology, from the length of Iran and Israel, the two countries that either have nuclear weapons in the case of Israel or were pursuing nuclear weapons in the case of Iran. There are other countries, other players that want a legitimate civilian nuclear program for their own needs. First of all, diversifying their energy mix. And I believe that this is a good thing that the United States is trying to offer that. We are not the only game in town when it comes to nuclear technologies. There is the French, there is the Koreans, who are very much willing to work with Arab countries to build civilian nuclear programs. So I think it's a really good thing the United States is stepping in, and also recognizing that we should not only think about the Arabian Gulf states from a very outdated length of the 1970s, 1980s. The only thing that we need is just energy for security. We need to diversify. We need to make sure that this relationship is very much anchored in our own mutual needs. I'm speaking here as an American. I want to make sure the United States gets what it wants and satisfies all national interests. And the same thing, being mutually beneficial for Saudi Arabia. If Saudi Arabia wants to be a hub for AI compute, there's no problem to help Saudi Arabia build its own AI ecosystem, of course, with all the safeguards, with all the guardrails, with all the commitments that we should get.
So and
we
should let also me ask think you on this. Let me ask you about this, Mohammed, because people who are very pro-Israel in Washington, where you are, how are they going to take that clip that we played earlier of Donald Trump saying he puts Saudi Arabia and Israel on the same plane? How will he take the fact that you heard the Crown Prince there firmly talking about the two-state solution, supporting the Palestinian cause and inside of the Oval Office? How's that going to go down?
François, this is an excellent question. And let me be frank here. There is a gradual decoupling when it comes to the question of Israel and the Arab Gulf states that's taking place in Washington in a I would say gradual pace in the past 5-6 years. Washington recognizes that you cannot just put a lot of conditions on the bilateral relationship with Saudi Arabia in a way that I would say slow down some of the things that Washington really needs for its own national interest. We right now as the United States are compute deficit. We do not have enough compute to supply emerging markets. And because of that, we have a real risk that China would be able to fill that sort of compute deficit. Should we anchor Saudi Arabia in the American stack or not? Now we have a problem with China when it comes to critical minerals. Should we bring Saudi Arabia to our own broader geoeconomic ecosystem or not? Those are bigger questions. And because there are bigger questions, and also because Saudi Arabia is a G20 economy, a country in Asia that's playing, and I would say, playing a very important role in international conference, even between Russia and Ukraine. We should recognize Saudi Arabia as Saudi Arabia and do not try to make the relationship with Saudi Arabia about someone else. And I think this president recognizes that, regardless of how you think about him politically.
Suzanne Kilb, in the context of what you just heard from Mohammed, who's got the upper hand in this relationship? Is it Donald Trump or is it Mohammed bin Salman?
I think Mohammed bin Salman played his cards extremely well. His learning curve is amazing, considered his start in 2018. And I think he knows what he's doing. He was, I think it was great thinking to think about making Saudi Arabia an independent, a much more independent place as it was before. I mean, it was always silent before. They never raised their voice, whether they agreed what the U.S. did or not. And that has changed fundamentally with this crown prince. He made very clear, I will be a more independent. I will create a more independent Saudi Arabia. I think the turning point was in September 2019 when Iran attacked the oil facilities of Aramco, and it was very clear that they made very clear that Saudi Arabia cannot count on the U.S. That was an experience they had. They will not want to see that again. So they turned to other countries and to other partners, and that made very clear to the U.S. that you could lose us if you don't treat us right. And I think Trump understood that very well.
So let me ask the flip side of that, Suzanne, because on Monday we saw the Trump administration accomplishing a rare feat these days, which is getting a UN Security Council resolution on a major issue passed. China and Russia abstained on his plan for Gaza. Is it Saudi Arabia that's keeping Donald Trump now interested in the two-state solution? Remember, when the war began, Trump was talking about Gaza on the Riviera. He wasn't talking about the Palestinians.
I think in this case, Saudi Arabia can play a real good role. I mean, they have the leverage. And if this is the condition to create a broader peace in the Middle East, they are the heavyweight that can push that forward.
Salman Al-Ansari, will Donald Trump stick to his own plan, or will he diverge when it comes to the Palestinians?
With regards to Gaza?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've seen the diversion, which is a positive one, as you mentioned, with the UN Security Council draft that has been sponsored by the United States with eight other countries. And I believe that was actually a very good and positive step in the right direction, because we've seen how the Israeli government has tried so much for the last couple of years to make the two-state solution sound like the two-state delusion. But I think with this UN Security Council draft, we are putting, and the United States itself is putting the two-state solutions back on the table. Yes, definitely, we've seen how Netanyahu and his radical government has objected to it. The same goes with Hamas, and that shows how Hamas and Netanyahu are two sides of the same coin, so we need to sideline the obstacles as soon as possible to get peace, to get the peaceful momentum going, because the Saudis, along with the French, with their French allies, have helped to create the biggest momentum for the recognition of Palestine. Right now, we have more than 159 countries. Most of Western European countries have recognized Palestine. So right now, the United States doesn't want to become isolated from the international community on this specific issue, because we are speaking like four out of the five Security Council permanent members are actually recognizing Palestine right now, except for the United States. So it's very embarrassing for the United States if they don't reactivate the solution of the two-state solution. Yes, I don't see it to be possible with the current Israeli government, but I think we need to keep up the momentum until we see how things will evolve, because at the end of the day, we really want to see the United States to be America first rather than Israel first. And I think Trump is working on that.
Bertrand Besancenot, the Saudis, remember, October 7th happened more than 2 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And the Saudis were quiet for a lot of that time, or we didn't hear them much, put it that way. What's changed? And again, will Donald Trump stick to his own plan?
No, I think that the Saudis are interested in...
How invested are they?
Yeah, no, they were really interested and they are still interested in having a relationship with Israel, even for, because it is a country with a lot of technology, especially in terms of security and so on. But at the same time, and what happened after the 7th of October and the uncompromising policy of Mr. Netanyahu and the onslaught in Gaza changed, of course, the mind of the Saudi leadership. They know what is their public opinion. They know what is the public opinion in the Arab world. And they know that they have cards to play with President Trump. President Trump wants two things. He's a businessman, so he wants to have contracts from the Gulf. And he dreams of having the Nobel Prize, the Peace Nobel Prize, which means extending the Abraham Agreement. But for that, he knows that the Saudis are very clear about the fact that they need to have a very strong commitment to build a Palestinian state. So there will be a discussion. It will be a deal between those two. And it is clear that Prince Mohammed bin Salman is maybe the only Arab leader which is really listened to by President Trump, because President Trump wants these two things, the contracts and the Nobel Prize.
All right. And Saudi Arabia going in all in. We saw him being listened to when it came to the normalization with a new Syrian regime that had broken with previous backer Iran. First, there was that ice-breaking handshake between Donald Trump and Mohammed al-Shara when the interim president of Syria traveled to a regional summit in Saudi Arabia back in May. Shara has since been to the White House. And now there's the first delivery of much-needed oil 90,000 tons of it, or 650,000 barrels, if you will, to the Syrian port city of Banias. The fact that it's the Saudis that have put a lot of political capital into helping Syria. Suzanne Kerbel, your thoughts on just how much, as the ambassador said, that Mohammed bin Salman is the leader that Donald Trump listens to in the Arab world.
I mean, he definitely listens to the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. I mean, as the ambassador said, I mean, they have a lot in common. They have a lot of common interests. And when it comes to Syria, I mean, Saudi Arabia was highly invested in this war, and certainly they try to shape the Middle East in a way that fits both. There are different interests, as we just learned about Gaza and the double two-state solution. But I think that's a very fruitful. I mean, when we talk about this, that can be very fruitful. Yes, and Saudi Arabia becomes more influential than it has been politically.
So again, Salman Al Ansari, last question, because we're running short on time. Is Saudi Arabia now going to be more invested regionally going forward as a result?
Yeah, the Saudis have actually created a model of their own. Their project is development and prosperity for itself and for the region, because the Crown Prince has said it earlier. He said he wants to see the Middle East to be the new Europe. And how can you have the Middle East to be the new Europe without having all the countries around you to be prosperous? And so that's why the Saudis are actually putting all their weight behind all the countries that are trying to reform their institutions, etc., such as like Syria. But with regard to another point that I wanted, and with Syria, I remember a friend of mine is Syrian. He said, how can we pay you back as Saudis? How can we pay the Saudis back with regards to what they have done diplomatically to pressure and to convince the Trump administration to lift the sanctions? And I told him the only way to pay us back is to be successful. And he really loved the answer, because we really want the rest of the countries around us to be successful. But with regards to what Susan has said from Berlin, I agree a lot with a lot of what she said, just except for the part about the human rights, etc. In reality, Edelman Institution, which is an American institution here in the U.S., they have put Saudi Arabia for three years, consecutive years, as the country with the biggest government trust in the world, number one in the world. So the majority of the Saudis are actually in complete synchronization with the government, and they really believe on its mission. We have been 92% dependent on oil 8 years ago. Right now, it's 48%. We are seeing a lot of reforms for women. Now it's the golden age for women, etc. And the World Bank report about business women in business and law in 2020, have marked and put Saudi Arabia as the top country with regards to the amount of reforms that we have created.
We'll be revisiting the situation domestically in Saudi Arabia going forward. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I want to thank you so much.
You guys are all welcome. Please come.
Okay, Salman Al Ansari, thank you for the invitation. Thank you for joining us. I want to thank as well Mohammed Soliman for being with us from Washington, Suzanne Kerbel for being with us from Berlin, Ambassador Besancenot, thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.